Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. In 2001, Sharon Stone was a household name, known for her roles in films like Total Recall, Basic Instinct, and her Oscar-nominated performance in Martin Scorsese's Casino. She was also a new mom, having recently adopted her first son, Roan. But Sharon's life and career changed forever when she started to experience severe head pain. On her way to the hospital, Sharon passed out. Here's what she writes about what happened next. Quote, I opened my eyes, and there he was standing over me just inches from my face, a stranger looking at me with so much kindness that I was sure I was going to die. He was stroking my head, my hair. God, he was handsome. I wished he were someone who loved me instead of someone whose next words were, "You're bleeding into your brain." Sharon later learns that she had a massive stroke. The bleeding was so severe that doctors warned she might not survive, and if she did, she might not talk again. Sharon called her family and her friends and told them she might not have much time left. Sharon Stone did live, but her body, mind, career, relationships, and soul were all deeply affected by her near-death experience. The actor writes all about this and about her childhood, her career in Hollywood, her activism, and a whole lot more in her new memoir, The Beauty of Living Twice, now a New York Times bestseller. Sharon Stone, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. How are you today?
I'm doing just great. How are you? How's your day?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
You know, the book started in the living room of a friend on Nantucket, Mary Haft, and you write you moved in with her, and with a, quote, bit of encouragement, poking and prodding from Mary and author J.K. Weston, they said, we're going to get you to write this book. What were those first conversations like with your friends, and what kind of encouraging and poking and prodding did they do?
Well, I was at the Nantucket Book Festival, Mary and I became fast friends. She was running the festival. And a couple of people that were meant to help her couldn't come, so I decided I would stay and help her with the festival, so she asked me to move in. And I met all of these fantastic war writers, writers who had done so many brave and courageous things, and I started spending time with these extraordinary writers and helping them tell their stories and introduce their books to the world. And in the meantime, I had been writing since I had gone to college mm-hmm. on a writing scholarship when I was 15. And I'd been putting, you know, many of my short stories had been published, and I didn't really know what I was going to do. I'd gone to different publishers about publishing my short stories who felt that that would be a completely uninteresting adventure. And I wasn't sure that I ever really wanted to write a memoir. And these writers read some of the things I had written and started encouraging me and telling me that I really, really did need to start putting particularly the stories that were true stories about my childhood together. And I had mm-hmm. another good friend here in Los Angeles who was a writer who kept telling me, you've got to write these stories. You've got to write about your family. And so I started trying to cobble something together there in Mary's living room. And it was really stressful to try mm-hmm. to do it. It was scary. They were really incredibly professional, wonderful writers, and I felt, you know, kind of small next to them, and I wanted to devote myself to it, and there was this kind of equal balance of, I have something to say, and I have no idea how to say it, which gave me a migraine, and I spent a couple days in bed trying to see if I could get past that lock of, I want to do it, but I can't. And I broke through and then sat down and really started to write. And I had to figure out from what point I was going to write. And I, you know, just a memoir about me is not really my style, because I'm a very private person, so I wanted to write something that I thought would be relevant and meaningful, and to me that would be to do what I do, which is to explore things from the most difficult and dangerous position. Mm-hmm. I think that's what makes things interesting, to really dig deep. So I ask myself, I felt the hardest question, which is, how did I end up in this horrible position?
Mm-hmm.
That made my life so different, that changed everything about my life. And so I started there and started really weeding through the tall grass.
As you sat down and you started to write the book, and obviously it evolves and changes and shifts, was there something particular that you wanted to address or correct or just put to bed about Sharon Stone in this book?
No, that wasn't my motive at all. My motive really was, why did I find myself in this position?
Mm-hmm.
Why was I in a life and death position? Why did I lose all the things that I thought were the most valuable to me, and why was I starting my life over, and why did I go through such a long, difficult, and dark place? And I think that anyone whose life is turned completely upside down and then shaken out,
mm-hmm.
Needs to do. These, you know, I had lived in Africa when I was a young, in my early 20s, and these wonderful friends of mine made me an African mandala painting that says, "My hut having burned to the ground, I can now clearly see the stars." And when I moved from one house to the other, most of my belongings were stolen. And that is one thing that made the journey.
Huh.
And I was really grateful to have that thing, because there's great clarity in that concept, that if you lose everything, what do you still have? And I still had myself. And what is the self? What is the core self?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when we get in these positions, it's only the core self that allows us to survive. So it's really important that we make friends with our core self and find out who we are, and that we don't go around blaming or reaching outward to try to find the answers, but that we get still and centered and reach inward to find the answers. And so even though I had done tons and tons of that, I still felt that I had unanswered questions. And the book allowed me a very private, I thought, until I decided to, you know, release the book. I didn't really think about the releasing part, which is the novice part of this.
Yeah.
I just wrote and wrote and wrote. And then my amazing editor, Tim O'Connell, and then towards the end, his incredible cohort, Anna Kaufman, came in and brought that beautiful female perspective to the editing, and her gentleness and humor in, because she and I are both pretty funny. She brought that into the room, and you know, she's, my humor and her humor really matched, and there was something really great about this last few weeks where I went to NOF in New York and got to sit in those great rooms where all of these astounding editors and writers had come together before me, that just held that magic. And I got to sit with them for, you know, 1,000 hours a day in snowstorms in New York, and really hunker down and get to the meat of it. And while so many other people would want me to, you know, write it up, they really understood that I'm a very bare-bones writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like to write it up. I like to write it down. I like to take out as many words as possible. and just get to the bone of it. And I really think that's where the humor comes in the worst of situations. I think that's how you survive the worst of situations. So it's clear to me that that's how you get to the answers. And that's how you face the truth, is with that kind of, you know, harsh look at things that brings on the humor and brings on the truth.
What was a truth that you had to face that you did not see coming? Because sometimes when you write, things appear that you didn't expect.
I didn't expect, and this is something I didn't really realize. I think this is hitting a nerve with me. I feel very emotional. I didn't expect, I mean, I knew that many people had shared many of my experiences. More than statistics show in every area of all the experiences I shared. But I didn't expect it to be quite as, that my experiences would be quite as universally understood as they are. And I didn't expect the enormous global understanding and the massive, kind, loving, humorous, compassionate response to the book, and the way that it's helping and breaking down barriers and allowing healing for so many people. It's, I didn't expect that it was going to do so much good or be so meaningful to other people. I didn't expect that it was going to reach so many people. I didn't expect that it was going to help so many family members talk to each other. I didn't expect that so many mothers and their children were going to relate to each other as a result of my book. I mean, I obviously hoped that someone somewhere would get the responsive healing and care that writing it did for me. But I am so grateful and so humbled and so honored by the healing and the just the, I guess, the love.
You know, it's interesting you should say that, because I was watching, just to prepare, watching previous interviews that you've done about the book, and I went to the comments section, which normally I would tell someone not to do, but I might tell you to do this, because the comments were so interesting. One, they didn't know. They didn't know about the stroke. They didn't know about your life story growing up. Difficulty and poverty and the like. A lot of people said, oh, she's a beautiful woman on the outside and the inside. And I'm not saying all of this to make you feel good, but I thought it was so interesting in a place which is not known for being particularly kind or nice, the internet. the comments were. And I found that really interesting. And you've kind of tapped into something with people. Do you have a sense of what that is now that you've been out on book tour and going through these interviews and having to think about the book and its messages?
Well, for a long time, I didn't tell anyone about the stroke because, you know, my business is not a kind one. And I needed to hopefully one day be able to come back to it. And not be a pariah. And even still, coming back to it was like climbing a hill of broken glass and keep getting shoved back down, you know. And I just didn't want to set myself up for failure, so I kept most of these things to myself. I think everybody feels that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether you have a heart attack or a stroke or cancer or a terrible divorce, we all know that doesn't make you popular. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, people aren't like, oh, gee, let me run in there. It's like running into a burning building. It's like people go, ew, let me know when that's over. You know, it's not like there are that many great people in your life that rush up and say, gee, let me stand next to you while that's happening. Mm-hmm. Gee, let me help you out. So I just kept everything to myself, and I became increasingly isolated. I feel like, you know, we don't know as human beings how to be helpful, how to be empathetic, how to be decent. I mean, this is why I'm really grateful that Biden is president. More than anything, he's a decent human being. Every day I see him do one more decent action. Yesterday, telling, you know, his conference about, you know, it's time for the National Health Institute. It's time for the WHO to have a special institute that defends our country, like the National Defense Institute has a special institute. It's time that we defend ourselves against infectious disease and cancer and diabetes and these giant killers. We finally have, you know, this president who is stepping up mm-hmm. to the most needed things, which are compassion and empathy. You know, what's bigger than that? And yet this is something that our country, this new country, and maybe because of its newness, forgot about. Because you look at European countries and family takes care of itself. But we're not a country that has the tradition of family. We don't take care of each other. We don't take care of our elders, and we don't take care of our children who are homeless and desperate. Mm. And so it's so beautiful to have governing that is quietly pulling us back together without bravado, without braggartliness, just quietly and with dignity caring for its own.
My guest is Sharon Stone. The name of her book is The Beauty of Living Twice. You write that you come from survivors. When did this make a decision in your life, a decision you made because you were a survivor?
Well, I don't think that that's a moment. I mean, I think, however, where are you from?
I am from Jersey and New York City.
Well, so you know, I mean...
No, I know exactly what you mean.
Right? That's a dog-eat-dog place. I mean, you survive every day. Mm-hmm. And what you learn in your day-to-day lifestyle is something that you carry on. I mean, we didn't have money, right? Mm-hmm. But that didn't stop my parents from putting a newspaper in the trunk and my mother from putting wet washcloths in a plastic bag in the trunk. And on their way to someone's house for dinner, my dad would pull over next to a field and get out of the car, and my mom would take her shoes off and carry scissors into the field and cut a gigantic armload of flowers mm-hmm. and hand them to my dad. And then he would wrap them in the newspaper in the trunk, tie them in binder's twine. And then my mom would sit down in her seat, and my dad would wash her feet.
Wow.
And then they would take this gigantic bundle of flowers in the trunk to where someone's house they were going to for dinner. Now, could they buy flowers? No. But that didn't stop them from having this profoundly beautiful, loving, laborious experience on the way to someone's house.
It's a beautiful story. I wish we had more time, but I think we've given people I think we've intrigued people to buy your book. I'm going to say that. The name of the book is The Beauty of Living Twice. It's written by Sharon Stone. Sharon, you're a very good writer. I want to compliment you on that.
I really appreciate that, and I appreciate you talking about my book, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you people that are listening, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks so much.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.